Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Irish Farmers Journal weekly podcast. I'm joined in studio by a big crew today. I have Pat O'Toole, Adam Woods, Darren Carthy, Jack Kennedy and Siobhan Walsh. Huge amount of news has come out, I suppose, this week and even in the last 24 hours. One of those I'm going to start with you, Adam, if you don't mind. The animal medicines regulations, which were due to come in on the 28th of January, have been pushed back and have been very widely welcomed over the last 24 hours. Can you bring us up to speed with what's happening there?
Absolutely, Katrina. I guess there was a huge amount of concern and worry around these, impending regulations coming in on the 28th of January, as you said. That's going to move, we'll say, veterinary prescriptions, farmers buying dosing products, licensed medicines for dosing fluke, for dosing worms. From the 28th of January, they were going to have to get a prescription from their vet in order to buy those products. And farmers were worried and farm organisations were worried about what implications that would have for farmers. I guess a lot of part-time farmers up here in this region, Katrina, in the Northwest, you know, a lot of people do those jobs on a Saturday. A lot of vet practices aren't manned there isn't people in them on a Saturday or at the weekend. So if you walk into a vet practice to get a prescription on a Saturday, you may not have got that prescription. So it could, we'll say, you know, leave trouble then for dosing animals. So I guess farm organisations and the ILMA both lobbied hard, we'll say, to get changes. The minister has come back and he has deferred the regulations not to come in on the 28th of January, but instead come in on the 1st of June. And within that time frame, I guess, they are developing a national prescribing system. It's going to be via an app. So a vet will be able to prescribe these products via an app and it'll come to your smartphone. But they haven't used that yet and they haven't road tested that system. So between the 28th of January and the 1st of June, vets are going to road test that system. So hopefully it will time for vets to get used to it, time for merchants to get used to it, and most important of all, time for farmers to get used to it.
And am I right, Adam, in saying that you mentioned the ILMA there, which is the Merchants Association? So, for example, if you go and buy your fluke dose in the co-op, they're likely to be a member of that Merchant Association. But one very practical change made yesterday is that if you now get a prescription, you still require a prescription for your fluke dose, it will last for 12 months. Is that right? It had been feared that it would be a lot shorter.
Yeah, there was a real concern that prescription would only last 5 days. So that would mean you would be running to the vet every time you needed to dose. And if you had sheep, if you had cattle, if you had different types of cattle and different times of dosing, you would have to get a prescription every time. But they've changed that and that it'll be a 12-month prescription from a vet. So that will cover you for the 12 months. The one thing they haven't cleared up, Katrina, is the issue around generics or what they call interchangeable products. So at the moment, a vet will prescribe a specific product. It was thought that they would prescribe maybe an active ingredient content, and the farmer would be allowed to go away then and go to a merchant and get advice, I guess, on what product to use. Well, under the current regulations, that the vet will specifically prescribe a specific product. And there is worry out there that vets may prescribe a product that's sitting 3 foot away from them on the vet's bench, rather than prescribe a product that might be in another location, in another, we'll say, merchant or another store. So that needs clearing up. And I know the Merchants Association are quite worried about that one, in terms of, I suppose, as from a farmer's point of view, in terms of using generic products. We all know that those the flagship products are always quite expensive, but then the second class ones, or the generic products with the same active ingredient but may not be inexpensive, farmers use those, and it's economically beneficial for farmers to use those, and we don't want that to change. So I guess that needs clearing up, and the minister has assured farmers that he will look at that in the coming weeks.
And that, Adam, I'm guessing as well, would reduce the farmer's ability to shop around for. So if you just have a prescription for the active ingredient, you can go and buy that active ingredient wherever you want to buy it at the cheapest cost. Whereas Absolutely. If you have to buy a particular brand name, that's less likely to be available cheaper somewhere else, is it?
Absolutely. There are some brand names that are only stocked by vets. So the fear would be that a vet would naturally just prescribe the product that they have, and they have exclusive rights to selling that product, rather than prescribing another product. So I think that needs to be clear. Look, we've seen common sense come into this in terms of deferral and in terms of allowing vets to drug test the system over the next 3 or 4 months. I think we'll have to see some common sense in this one as well. And look, it's been broadly welcomed by everybody, farmers, farm organisations, merchants, and hopefully those little issues will be resolved now in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, and we have, as you say, that extra 5 months from January to June now to clear up those issues. Adam, you'll have more on that in next week's paper, I'm guessing.
Yep.
Thanks very much for your time.
The Irish Farmers Journal has now reached our highest ever readership, with 321,000 weekly print readers. Thank you for your support.
I'm going to go to Pat O'Toole, please, Pat. The front page story this week and inside, a lot more information, a lot more clarity on some aspects of the next cap. The one that you focused on in particular was the entitlements.
Yeah, the whole issue of entitlements is a very vexed question. About one in three farmers trade entitlements. So Declan O'Brien's front page story and Darren Carty's a lot of analysis on the inside and how entitlements will be treated. The profound changes, because the reality is that what we call the basic payment, with greening included, because almost every farmer gets greening every year, is traded at about half its value, is the typical market price per year. And one in four farmers is either leasing out entitlements or leasing in entitlements each year. So it's widespread practice in farming. There's a lot of money, about 60 million euros a year involved in it. And that basic payment is going to be cut by 40% to create the new BIS, because of the money that's been taken away for greening, the money that's been taken away from the CRISP payment, the front loading. So how will the government achieve the parallel ambition of trying to promote active farmers owning entitlements and having entitlements and reducing the amount of armchair farming? So what they're proposing is that in 2023 and 2024, the clawback that exists on the sale of entitlements, which is set at 20%, will be removed. There'll be an amnesty on the clawback for the transfer of entitlements. And that's to try and encourage entitlements to move from non-active farmers to active farmers through sale. Subsequent to that, you're going to have the clawback on entitlements put in place when they're being leased, and that will be a 10% clawback for leases of less than 5 years. Now, there are a start in terms of measures to address what is a very significant issue in farming. All the farm organisations were calling for a concentration to promote active farmers and prioritise them. But it's only a piecemeal start, let's be honest. The reality is that long-term leases, which are subject to tax breaks for the person who's leasing out the entitlements, have not been touched. The issue of the fact...
Can I just check with you, because it's sometimes the leasing of entitlements and the leasing of land, the incentives are there for the long-term leasing of land, isn't it,
correct,
rather than entitlements?
You're absolutely right correcting me there, because I suppose they're indivisible, because the majority of long-term leases of entitlements are linked to land and gain the tax advantages that exist for the leasing of the land, because they're bundled in. And what we've seen over the years is people who have perfectly legally and perfectly properly taken advantage of the system to lease out entitlements for 5 years, 10 years, 12 years. And when the lease is up, release them in a new lease, the entitlements and the land, keeping the ownership of the entitlements in the hand of the landowner rather than the active farmer.
And it's one of the criticisms, isn't it, of, you know, the way the land market is stacked at this stage.
Absolutely.
More in favour of a landowner than the farmer who's actively, say, ploughing the land or putting cattle on it or sheep on it.
Yeah, and there's nothing here to address that. And the other huge emerging issue is existing leases, which are maybe halfway through. And many of them are long, very long-term leases because of the government's incentivization. The bigger you get, a higher tax shelf or a higher amount of money tax-free, the longer you roll out the lease. So if you have a lease 3 or 4 years in with 5 or 6 years left to go, the problem is that the entitlement is losing value, but the lease may stipulate money value for the lease on a year-to-year basis. And there's going to be a huge issue between farmers. The government may need to step in here to try and provide some guidance, because if you take the new payment, as I said, the BIS will only be 60% of the basic payment, so there's that loss of valuation. The CRSP payment will be included on the first 30 hectares, but if you have a farmer with 30 hectares or more and they're leasing in entitlements, they've maxed out their CRSP entitlements, so they won't get any more front loading. It's called front loading for a reason. So that money is not available to the farmer who's paying it for the entitlement. And then if you look at the eco schemes are not linked to entitlements. You don't need an entitlement to avail of an eco scheme. You just need to meet the qualifying criteria. So again, that money is not linked to the old entitlement and the old lease agreement. So there's a whole can of worms here, and we have to wait and see how the government tackle them.
I'm going to bring in Darren here, because Darren, you had a couple of calls on exactly what Pat is saying there, didn't you? Obviously, we're not going to give anybody's details in this week's podcast, but someone who had a lease agreement that both mentioned an amount of money that those entitlements are not necessarily worth now.
Yeah, exactly, Katrina. The phone, really, I suppose, there's been a lot of very concerned people yesterday, both, I suppose, that have leases or that are just wondering about maybe what the future holds for leases or arrangements that they're going to go in. But one in particular had stated there was X amount of money to be transferred. When he looked at it, this, he was no longer in a position to draw down the front loading on the value of the entitlement. He would be have to spend money to draw down the eco schemes money. So he's seen that as, well, that was fair game. Now, should he be handing it back? And the other one was, he doesn't know how much convergence is going to affect him. But essentially, the difference between the figure of what's written down that he was going to return to the farmer every year and what he'd be getting was half. And it was a quite substantial figure. The other thing that
figures. So let's say Farmer A and Farmer B. Farmer A and Farmer B have a contract, and in that contract it says, I will pay you the value of the entitlements, which is 10,000. And that might be a 7-year agreement, for example. But now we know that 10,000 euro is not necessarily going to be there. So the Farmer A, who is the person leasing the entitlements into themselves, is saying, A, I'm not getting that money now, and B, am I tied into this contract, I suppose, isn't it?
That's exactly, and like that's something that we're going to have to seek some clarification on, is these contracts are legally binding, but is there any, I suppose, maybe allowance in it that if there are written a line in it that if something significant changes, you would hope that a lot of people, the way the leases would have been done, that there would have been a line in it that they'd be reviewed from time to time, or that they'd be reviewed in light of significant changes to entitlement values, because that's I suppose is the most important one. Now look at that's affecting, I would imagine, like we 14,500 farmers leasing out entitlements, 12,500 leasing them in. I would say, Katrina, you're probably in the region of 20% that have the real long term leases, because as we know, the majority of leases are still 1 year leases. And there's quite, I suppose, maybe a bit of concern around that as well. This, even I talked to a couple of auctioneers yesterday to see have they been doing business as usual or what's happening? And they say, look, they haven't. They haven't done any real business because people, there's a void of information there. And this week, what Pat is after discussing probably throws fuel onto the fire.
Yeah, so they've been in limbo and now they've got enough information to put the cat among the pigeons.
Exactly. That's
something we're going to look at in next week's paper and possibly in a webinar as well in the coming days. We'll have more news of that as it is firmed up. But Pat, I suppose another one that came in the last 24 hours is the new eco scheme measures. There had been a lot of criticism that there were five measures there that not a lot of farmers could get into. There'd been a lot of pressure put on the Department of Agriculture to give extra measures. They put those out there yesterday. Can you tell us about them?
Yes, some new measures, Katrina, three entirely new measures and some significant changes to the five existing measures to expand them. So to take the new measures first, so one is soil sampling. This can only take place one in 3 years, where you soil sample and, where appropriate, lime all eligible hectares. This one is not open to derogation farmers because they are required under the terms of the derogation to do that level of soil sampling. So some criticism of that from IFA, but the department are trying to balance in all these things what is mandatory in Pillar 1 and what will be optional in Pillar 2, because they're mindful of the agri-environmental schemes in Pillar 2 as well and leaving some options for that. The second one then is enhanced crop diversification. So this one's aimed at tillage farmers. So you can plant a break crop as your second or third crop. The break crops listed are beans, peas, oilseed rape or oats. For those people in a two-crop system, the requirement is for 25% of the land in the qualifying year to be in a break crop. This may or may not suit depending on crop mix. The three crop requirement, again, the break crop, 25%. The third one then is the sowing of a multi-species sward, something which has proved quite popular this year as an emerging option on farms for commercial reasons. And it's now going to be an agri-environmental option for the scheme. 6% of your eligible hectares must be applied, planted with multi-species swards in the qualifying year. And with the price of fertilizer rocketing next year, I think we're going to see a lot of on-farm establishment of multi-species swards. And that may test, you know, there's been some criticism that Chagas have been quite slow to do significant research on multi-species swards, but there's nothing like road testing it on thousands of farms, and we may well see that next year, and we'll know a lot more about the effectiveness of multi-species swards across the variety of climates and soils in the country this time next year in advance of the new scheme. So then the amendments. The nitrogen limits have been very significantly reviewed. So the original nitrogen limits, it was a max of 73 kilos of nitrogen per hectare, which was around 60 units of CAN per acre. So how do we evaluate the new? Well, what's happened is they've set some bands up. So people above 90 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare, who will be moderately stocked, they will be allowed to spread 89 kilos of chemical nitrogen per hectare. People between 131 and 170, so that's well stocked but under derogation farmers, they'll be allowed to spread 165 kilos of chemical nitrogen per hectare. People in derogation, but in the lower half of derogation, that's between 171 and 210 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare, will be allowed to spread 240 kilos of chemical nitrogen. That equates to about 7 bags of CAN as a slide rule per acre. And then people highly stocked in the upper reaches of the derogation, above 210 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare, they will be more limited. They will be limited to 214 kilos of chemical nitrogen per hectare. So that's there's quite a lot to unpick in that. And it's the one that I think there was most discussion about on Thursday evening as the as the story broke. There are some other expansions to existing measures. The existing measure around a GPS-controlled fertiliser spreader, that now is also going to include GPS-controlled sprayers that are used to either apply liquid fertiliser or chemicals, plant protection products. So that's a logical one because, you know, the same advantage of the precision of application and also the full verification of any application of a product by a farmer exists. And the other one then, in terms of the space for nature, or what we currently know as environmental focus areas, the requirement is 7% of the farm to be devoted to that. But if farmers go for 10% or more of their farm being environmental focus areas, that counts as two actions and they're straight in, because of course you have to qualify. To qualify for eco schemes, you have to fulfill two criteria, but that will fulfill the two criteria on its own. And the same applies to the native species tree planting criteria. You were required to plant 3 trees per hectare, but now you can double up and plant 6 trees per hectare per year, and you will qualify as 2 practices and you're straight in. There have been some criticisms from farmer organisations who had made further proposals around measures, including reducing the average calving period of heifers, around some veterinary practices that could have been incentivised. But I think what farmers have to accept is that there's a very broad range of qualifying criteria proposed here. The criticisms are more likely now to come from the environmental pillar, who may see this as going from what was started out as a high ambition programme to now being quite low ambition. So we wait and watch.
And by that, Pat, you're referring specifically to the level of bar that's there now for people to pick an eco scheme measure that suits them. The fertilizer, the stocking rates, that's one that's going to allow much more farmers in than previously. But also I think the doubling up of those measures is not as difficult. If someone has the space and maybe the type of farm that suits, it will be much easier for them to tick 2 boxes, won't it, to the minimum 2 measures in the eco scheme to get the full payment?
I think so. And you've got to remember how much money is involved here. 25% of Pillar 1 funds, which, you know, it's going to be over $1 billion over the 5 years. You're talking about the average farmer on 35 hectares being able to get somewhere close, certainly over 2,000 a year. The department are modelling it at €74 a hectare, but they were assuming that 18,000 farmers would miss out. I think with these broadened criteria, the number of farmers who will miss out will be far lower. Most farmers will now reach to qualify for the eco schemes, and the money will probably drop to under €70 a hectare. But having said that, it's still a very significant amount of money. And the point that were being made last night, yes, around fertiliser rates, but also the idea that planting 2 metres of hedgerow per year would qualify you for that, so per hectare. So the 35 hectare farmer getting the 2,500 per year would only have to plant 70 metres of hedgerow to qualify. So there's criticism that that's a very low reach, and that the taxpayer is not getting enough for their money. And the danger here is the balancing act to provide access but still keep the credibility of the scheme intact.
I'm going to bring Jack in here, followed by Siobhan, because I suppose dairy farmers, and in particular the more intensively stocked dairy farmers and also tillage farmers, I think were 2 cohorts that would have seen the original 5 measures as making it very difficult for them to get all of their money back through eco schemes. As Pat says, it looks now like the measures have been broadened to such an extent that we will have a lot more of those getting in. What's been the feedback, Jack, so far on the dairy side?
Yeah, I'd agree. And in terms of probably the, you know, it's going to definitely open the door to more dairy farmers picking the nitrogen one or picking the trees. Because again, with the tree measure, that piece around leased land was coming up for a lot of farmers in terms of if they had a lot of leased land and in terms of trying to plant trees across all the hectares, it was maybe going to necessitate a very heavy planting on owned land, we'll say, as opposed to leased, you know. So look, I definitely think, as Pat says, that the door is opened wider. the nitrogen piece again. You see, I think we need to kind of keep it in context of what we're trying to do, or I'll say what's good for Ireland Inc. in terms of the grassland country that we have. Like, I mean, it's grass is the best goalkeeper of nutrients that we have, we'll say, across the island. So if we try and push it more towards a higher production type cow system, a higher intensive system, you know, you'll move away from grass. That's we've seen that across the world, you know. So I think it looks to me like there's a kind of a drive here or an onus here to try and keep the grassland system as the main system for producing milk, particularly in the country. And that's why the nitrogen piece is the way it is.
And Siobhan, I know that the mixture of species, Jack, we'll come back to you on nitrates in a minute as well, which is obviously fertilizer related. But Siobhan, the break crops, there's kind of a mixed reaction to that. Is there some people saying that they don't want to be careful on the type, the actual proportion of the break crop, isn't it? And also why were certain crops not included?
Yeah, look, Katrina, I think these ecoschemes need to come back to science as well. So they've said now 25% of your land needs to be in a break crop. Reality is, if you look at oilseed rape as one of the crops listed, oilseed rape needs a rotation of one in every 5 years. Or you're going to, like, we're always talking about integrated pest management, but yet there's a sclerotinia risk there with that measure. The same with beans, like one in every 6 years. Look, apart from the fact that goes against IPM and everything else, I think that's going to be extremely hard on some farmers to implement. If you look at most tillage farms are either on the border of the 30 hectares for the tree crop requirement, or they're growing two crops. And, their cash crop is going to be affected here, and they could end up growing a crop like beans, which is extremely, it's an undependable crop, really. It's not reliable for yield. And I think farmers are going to be under pressure there with that, tillage farmers. And look, tillage was ignored basically in the first tranche of eco schemes. The fertilizer spreader one was there, the GPS technology. And it was
no
only
change to that, though. Is that right? You
no,
still but, have to have the so, expensive 30,000 yeah. machine versus a GPS on your tractor spreading it.
Yeah, I mean, tillage is the low emissions sector. We need more tillage land in Ireland. That measure isn't going to help a lot of tillage farmers. And the same now, so they've added the GPS sprayers to that measure. How many tillage farmers in Ireland have a GPS sprayer that's going to be able to avail of that measure? I personally love to see that measure go to navigation equipment. I think if we think of the amount of people who are driving around fields in Ireland with no markers in the field or no navigation, we'd save a hell of a lot of fertiliser. But like, these things have to come back to science. Like, we were talking about that nitrogen there on the dairy side of things. We have targets here in Ireland. We have targets to reduce under farm to fork, to reduce fertilizer use by 20%. We have a target to get nitrogen use down to 350,000 tons by 2025 and to 325,000 tons by 2030. This year, there was 399,000 tons of nitrogen went out in this country, up 20,000 tons on last year. Dairy farmers use 50% of the nitrogen in this country. And the measure there is allowing dairy farmers, it's saying it's okay to spread 240 kgs of nitrogen. And I know we have to, like, grass is the best way to produce milk, but there's science there telling us that if we have 20% of our swards have clover, we can spread 150 kgs of nitrogen. There's protected urea, there's less, there's loads of ways of reducing our nitrogen. And I just think these schemes need to match up to the policy and the targets that we have there to meet.
So I'm hearing lack of joined up thinking, Siobhan, from you.
Yeah, like, we farm to fork, we've ag climatized, and now we have eco schemes that are saying it's okay to spread 240 kgs of nitrogen when we're meant to be reducing our nitrogen. That's only a 4% decrease on the 250 kgs, and when our decrease is meant to be 20%. I mean, we're not going to meet our targets if we're saying it's okay to spread that amount of nitrogen.
Katrina?
Could I play devil's advocate? Pat, I'll let you in there one second. Could I play devil's advocate and say the farmers who are at that rate already are going to continue at that rate, and if they go into eco schemes, they will now be allowed to spread a similar amount of fertiliser, but they might also do something for the environment, such as the tree planting. So are they better in the scheme than out of the scheme, if you get my questioning?
I don't think the option should be there. If we're able to, if there's science there saying, you know, if advisors are coming out all the time saying we can reduce our nitrogen and we don't need to spread 240 kgs of nitrogen and we should have clover in our swards. If we've clover in our swards, we shouldn't need to apply 240 kgs of nitrogen to a sward.
Now, it's not an upward target either, is it? You know, it's not within the eco scheme, the 240 isn't a target. Pat, jump in there whenever you want.
Yeah, I just want to broaden this because, look, the nitrogen one is going to be a trigger one. And I'll be honest, I'm not comfortable with it either. I've no problem with it as a farm practice. I'm not sure if it's something that should be rewarded by as a qualification measure for an eco scheme. But just to the crop rotation briefly, as things stand, remember, farmers with three crops are required to have 25% in three crops and they no more than 75% in their main crop. And they must have a minimum of 10% in their second crop. Farmers with two crops are required to have no more than 85%, if I remember correctly, in their main crop. So this is a move. It's building on the three crop rule, which was resisted very strongly by farmers, but has turned out, I think, generally to be accepted as being a measure which has improved farming because of rotational practices which have been reintroduced into most tillage farms. But one thing that I think I was talking to one of the IFA lads yesterday, and they said they had done some modelling on the environmental focus areas on a range of farms, intensive dairy farm, an extensive dairy farm, dry stock farm, a tillage farm, a mixed farm, and all of them were qualifying comfortably for the 7%. And we know from the qualification for the greening that every tillage farm in the country was required to qualify for 4% EFA, and almost all of them did. And I think we're underestimating the amount of land which is actually in biodiversity, in our farming, in rural Ireland. And the conversation around the environmental, the link between the natural world and the environment and biodiversity and farming has become so polarised that I think we've forgotten that actually there's a lot in Ireland structurally, which is good. And farmers won't have to reach too hard, I think, in the main to get into these schemes. I do hope that we don't leave a booby trap in here to allow the people who are hostile to farming to accuse us of lowering the ambition of the schemes to a point where they become irrelevant.
Jack, you wanted to come in there on the eco schemes as well?
Yeah, and the two points that Siobhan and Pat have both made it in terms of either the multi-species ward or the kind of the grass and clover piece. I mean, the multi-species, I mean, Pat is dead right in terms of there's farmers all around the country, you know, making a start at multi-species, and Seagas have come in for criticism that they're kind of early days in terms of the trials around multi-species. I mean, the piece, the only piece to note around the farmers all around the country doing it is while you know, intentionally very good, there's not a lot of measurement going on in terms of if they're going to be successful or not. Do you know the kind of way? So individual farmers doing individual research trials that are not recorded, that are, of course, they'll have their own information and they will learn from themselves. But, it, you know, for as an industry, we're not learning anything about it because it's just, I call them random farmers doing their own thing, which could be perfectly correct to do, but it's not being measured and not being recorded, and that is a challenge for the industry more so than anything else. The multi-species piece at research level is in its infancy, I'll say, because all this piece is about how long the species will last in the grassland, and if it's going to have to be renewed every 2, 3, 4 years or whatever that might fall out, you know, that'll have implications as well, you know. So that, I think that's on the multi-species piece. The nitrogen piece, I think, relates a little bit, you know, again, just to kind of broaden it out in terms of the nitrates action plan, which is which Katrina is up for renew, and there's a piece on it again in the paper this week. You know, I mean, that and the derogation, like, bring a kind of, I suppose, a cohort of different pieces into play in terms of nitrogen and how it gets into our waterways. And that's soil water, that's slurry storage, that's, you know, organic nitrogen coming out from the cow, et cetera, and all that kind of thing. And they're all tightening up, or they're all moving as well as at the same time, I suppose, as this eco scheme has been introduced, at the same time as the derogation has been introduced, you know. So they're all potentially going to have positives, or should have positives, if they're targeted and if they're doing the right thing. If farmers have more slurry storage, which they should have, like, I mean, and we've always said it, and when they're not spreading at the wrong time of the year, they're all going to help improve water quality, which at the end of the day is what the Nitrates Action Plan, the derogation, the eco schemes are about in terms of trying to improve water quality.
The nitrates news that we have this week, Jack, is we're potentially, we understand, looking at a 2-year derogation, which would be half what we would usually get. What are you reading into that?
It's hard to know. So just to be clear, the derogation piece is on top of the action plan, and it allows farmers to go to a higher stocking rate. So it allows grassland farmers to stock their farm at 250 kilos of organic nitrogen per hectare, and that equates to a stocking rate. So that's what the derogation does principally. And it's countries like Ireland that can utilize a grass-based system of production, that's what the derogation is for, effectively a derogation to allow a higher organic nitrogen so that you can graze livestock, we'll say, to produce milk in that fashion. I mean, the 2-year
piece, we're in a minority now, aren't we, in that? Like, there are only four regions of Europe that get a derogation these days.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're dead right, because we're in a minority in the grazing world, because everyone has gone indoors and they're putting, instead of, you look around the world, they're putting thousands of cows on 10 hectares. You know, they're in feedlot type systems. Like, and that's, like, we talk about intensive and what's highly stocked. That's highly stocked, you know, relative to our system. So I think we need to be kind of careful in terms of highly stocked and in relative terms what it means. That's why we're allowed to do it, because we have a grazing system, and that, you know, give or take 70-80% of the land is covered in grasslands in Ireland. So it fits with our ecosystem, because we can grow grass, we can produce grass. You can't go to the sandy soils of the Netherlands and grow the same amount of grasses. That's why they're growing maizes and other cereals, because of that. So you look at the nitrates piece, the derogation piece, it's a specific Irish piece to allow that grassland stocking rate. The 2 years piece, for me, it puts a bit more pressure back on the department to show the results for it. And I think the EU have been clear on this, that guys, unless you get your water quality right, and I guess you show us the results and show us the numbers, well then, you know, we're going to keep coming back to you and keep tightening the bands. So that for me is kind of the 2-year piece. I think it's putting more pressure back on our department to a large extent to kind of show the money, show the results.
They'll be looking very closely at EPA figures. Guys, we're running out of time. Siobhan, I just want to draw listeners' attention to the fact that you've a great synopsis of fertilizer strategies, I suppose, that farmers should be thinking about given both the price and the scarcity. And that's reflected across the different sectors as well. I gather you've touched on that in the tillage podcast as well this week, fertilizer, have you?
Yeah, and sure, all the sector leads there have it in the news section of the paper as well. There's loads of advice there for farmers this week, and it's important. Look, fertilizer is expensive, and there's talks of shortages of supply, but there's loads of solutions there, and don't panic. You know, take simple steps, and you know, read the few that are in the paper there this week.
Thanks, Siobhan. And Darren, I know we cut you short there a little bit earlier, but you were going to be expanding on the CAP series in next week's paper. Obviously, that will include the contentious eco schemes, those new measures, and the pros and cons of all of them. What else have you planned for next week's paper?
Yes, and I suppose, look at Katrina, we will delve a bit more into the entitlements and follow up that, and try and get, say, some of farmers' queries answered, and try and maybe get a bit more indications on what the department is planning, or more concrete, I suppose, maybe details around that clawback and what's going to happen in the future.
It sounds like there'll be a few solicitors very busy, Darren, over the next while on the entitlements with the leases. Thanks.
I think their phones will be busy anyway, Katrina.
Certainly, the auctioneers and the solicitors, I'd say. Look, thanks very much. As I say, we've so much news in this week's paper and so many follow-ons for next week's paper, so be sure to pick it up. And thanks very much, everybody, for the time on the podcast today.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.